So we're having a four-week short course is what we're calling it, entitling this that every part has a place. If you're a part of this church, then you've got a place in this church, not just an entry in the directory, not just a picture on the hallway board over here, but you have a real meaningful place in this church. We said 2 weeks ago that there are you've got a lot of accessories on your car that you don't have to have on your car in order for that car to work, but you got a lot of accessories that you could live without. But I said, we talked about the fact that there are no accessories in the church. None of you are an accessory. Kind of nice to have around, but we don't really need you. No, everybody is a needed part of this church. Last week we talked about the fact that you've got all those extra buttons down in the bottom of your little, whatever that part of your shirt's called, whatever that is. You got those extra buttons that they sew on there, but they're just there. You never touch them. You never need them. Well, we don't have members of the church like that. You're all needed. And so tonight I want you to think about when I was on the basketball team in middle school and high school, we often had some guys that basically the coach didn't call them this, but they were basically bench warmers. You know what that means? I mean, if you got a basketball team and you got these guys who are bench warmers, what does that mean? They just sit there. What did you say over here?
They don't play.
They don't play. They don't. I mean, the bench warmer and at least on our team, the bench warmers, they don't have a uniform. They can come or not come to practice, but they're not even going to really participate in practice. And they sit on the end of not the pew. That's a church word. The bench. And they watch the game from courtside, but they're there. They're sitting with the team, right? They're down. It's like, yeah, no. Jimmy, you know what I'm talking about? I'm not experienced, but you know those other guys that have been the bench warmers. I mean, but that's not us. We don't have bench warmers. I mean, I know you're warming a bench right now, and so much appreciated, but we don't have bench warmers in the church that are just sitting there watching everybody else involved in the game. We're all involved in this game of life, but we're all involved as Christians. And everybody's got to be on the court. We all are needed on this team. So tonight, we said we were kind of looking at this class and the four classes kind of divided in half. The first two classes were kind of trying to lay a biblical foundation. So they were heavy on the biblical side of looking at how every one of us has a part to play. We looked in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 the first night and describing how the Bible describes the church as a body and uses that image of the body to say that's what the church is like. And every part of your body is needed and every part of the church body is needed. Last week we talked about some things that ought to motivate us to serve and we looked at a few of those. But tonight I want to kind of get into more of a practical application of this as we go through this. But I want you to turn your Bible for a moment to Matthew chapter 25. And we may come back here again next week, but I want you to look in Matthew chapter 25 as we start tonight. And I want us to recognize that every servant in the Lord's church has something to do. Everybody's got something to do. Now, if you turn to Matthew 25, the first 13 verses are the parable of what? 10 virgins, all right? Verses 1 through 13, parable of 10 virgins. Verses 14 through 30 is another parable. What's that parable?
Talents.
Parable of the talents, all right? You know the gist of the parable of the talents, but I just want to look at the first couple verses and try to help us to see how Jesus begins this particular parable. Now, it is a parable about readiness for the Lord's return. And we recognize that some of these men were ready for the Master's return and some were not. But I want you to see how this begins. This man calls his servants to him. And depending on your translation, New King James and other translations call these men his own servants. Might be the New American Standard that doesn't have the word own, but most translations have the word own there. He's not calling somebody else to him. He's not just flagging anybody down who will come through. The Master is calling his own servants. In the church, who's our Master? That's Jesus. Are we His own servants? Yeah, we belong to Him. So if He's going to call His own servants, He's not just flagging down anybody that's out on the highways and by. He wants them. But if He's going to call His own servants, that's a specific group of people. And that's us. That's each and every one of us. Now, what else does it say in verse 14? Kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country. Called His own servants. And what did He deliver to them? Whose goods? Did He give them their goods? Here you go. This is yours. No, it's not theirs. He delivered unto them His goods. Some translations have the word entrusted. What does that word mean? What does it mean if you entrust something or someone to another person?
You give it to them for a while to use wisely.
Okay, so you give it to them for a while. Parents, you drop your children off at school. You entrust the children, I think, right, to the teachers. What does that mean? You're getting rid of them. You're selling them. You've got confidence in them. You trust them, right? So you are entrusting them that they're going to take care of your children. Are you expecting them to do harmful things to your children? No. You're expecting the teachers to do what the teacher's supposed to do with your kid. What is that? What are teachers supposed to do?
Teach.
Good. Teach. All right. So the Lord has entrusted, not our goods, His goods to us. What's our responsibility? We got to use them. We've got to take what our Master has given to us and recognize it doesn't belong to me. So we're going to kind of peel that away a little bit tonight as we talk about it. Verse 15. How did He distribute to them? The end of the verse or the middle of the verse. He gave to each one according to his own ability. Now, first part of the verse says what? He gave to one man five, to another one, to another one. All right. And then it says, now, how did He decide to do that? Random chance? He just cast lots, flipped a coin. How did He decide? You're a five-talent guy. Scott Studer, you're a five-talent guy. So we're going to give Scott Studer five talents. David Sproul, you are not a five-talent guy. We're going to give you one talent. And He looks at the servants, at their ability, and that's, doesn't that make sense? Do certain people have more capabilities than others? I thought about asking Stephen or Amber or somebody who's in the school system, but I don't want to get too personal about it. Do some teachers have more capability, more ability than others? It's just natural, right? And so in your workplace, do some people have more capability? You know, Kayla McLeod cleans teeth. I'm assuming some people are better at that than others. And so He looks at His servants and He divvies up the abilities, the talents, the goods, not upon anything else, but what is their capability with this? All right, one more thing from verse 15. There were three servants who were there, right? As far as we know. They got five, they got two, they got one. Jesus did not say, when He's divvying these out, He didn't look at their abilities and say, there's not any zero talent people here. I want you to know that in the church, there are zero talent people, and there are no talent people in the church. Does that make sense? Everybody in this church, you're either a five talent, two talent, or one talent person. Somebody says, well, I really can't do much. I don't care. God doesn't care. God says if you can't do much, you're at least a one talent person, at least. Sometimes we shortchange ourselves, don't we? I think we shortchange ourselves a lot in the eyes of God. Maybe we shouldn't shortchange ourselves so much in the eyes of God and what He can do with us. But in God's eyes, there are no talent servants. What does that mean? You've got something that's been entrusted to you. At least on an entry level, you've got something that God has given to you. Some responsibility in the Lord's church that God has given to you. So as you think about what's my place, every part has its place. What is my place? What does God expect of us? He expects us to take what He has given to us, the abilities, the opportunities, the time, the resources. He expects us to go and find what those are. Have you ever sat around and said, "Well, I really can't do much in the church"? Have you ever made a list of what you can do in the church? You ever made a list of, here are some things that could be done in the church? Sometimes we look and say, "Well, that's somebody else is doing that. Somebody else is doing that." God wants us to find what is it He's entrusted. Now, did He give you a note like a hall pass? Here's what I've entrusted you with. You got to figure out. You need to find it. You need to hone that skill. What does that mean? You need to work on it. You need to improve it. You need to get better at it. You need to perfect your ability in whatever that is. You need to use it. And then you ought to go and develop some others. Some other things that you just because somebody was a one-talent guy, does that mean he always had to be a one-talent guy? Couldn't he grow, develop, mature, become a two-talent guy? Could have. The guy in this account did not. But we need to develop. We don't need to just say, "I'm okay with the status quo." We don't need to say, "Well, I've been doing this in the church for the last 25 years, and that's enough." Did Jesus have an attitude that said, "That's enough"? No. Did He have a "that's enough"? That's good enough? Did He leave? You talk about football players leaving everything out on the field. Did Jesus leave anything that He didn't give to us? He laid it all out. Gave every bit of it. 2 Peter chapter 3 says not just to grow in the knowledge of God, but to grow in the grace. What's that? How do you grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord Jesus? How do you grow in His grace? Eva? Okay, so that helps us. That helps us to grow. I know how you grow in faith and how you grow in not. How do you grow in the grace of God? Say again, Jimmy. Being humble. You better be humble if you're going to grow. How do you grow in the grace of God? What does grace mean? Darren, go ahead. Right. So did the five-talent man, did he grow in the grace of his master? The word grace means favor, okay? Did he grow in the favor of his master? How did he grow in the grace of his master? How did he grow in the favor of his master? This is exactly what y'all... He took what the master gave him, and he went and he utilized it, he worked it, so that he could give his master more back when he returned. He grew in grace. Did the two-talent guy grow in the favor of his master?
Yeah.
Did the one-talent guy grow in the faith? Did his master have favor towards him when he came back?
No.
Well, why not? I mean, he didn't squander it. I mean, he wasn't like the prodigal son and went and wasted it on riotous living. He was at least able to give it back to him. Say again. He missed the obedience part. Okay. Say again, Freddie. He didn't even try. Does God expect us to be perfect? Does He expect us to do everything possible under the sun in the church? No. But does He expect us to do everything that we can and to grow to be able to do more? So I want you to think about that. And I want you to think about that particular, developing new things, new abilities, looking for new opportunities. Chuck, you led singing tonight. You've been in the church all your life, right? When did you start leading singing?
Recently.
Last year? So here's a new opportunity, right? I mean, so here's Chuck in the prime of his life, right? I mean, here's young man Chuck, and he's But does that, just because Chuck hadn't done it for the first 40 plus years of his life, that's being generous. Does that, I've never led singing before, so I don't need to do it now. Does that mean I haven't done it before? I shouldn't be looking for an opportunity to do something I haven't done before? We just dismissed our children to their Bible classes. Well, you know, that's not really my thing. Jesus received children to himself. He wasn't above it. Not necessarily his thing. His disciples didn't think it was his thing. Get rid of these children. Is that something that maybe some more of us could do? Those who look for teachers, by the way, in our children's classes, it's one of the hardest jobs in this church is finding teachers for our children's classes. You want to make somebody's day? Volunteer. Say, I'd be willing to do it. And what is that? That might be stepping out of a comfort zone. That might be saying, you know what, I can't do this on my own, but I'd be willing to help. If I could get some training, if I get some, show me how to do it, you know, I'd be willing to step in. But, you know, stepping out into something that maybe I haven't done before, haven't thought about doing before, and some of you have done that just in the last couple of years. Angelica started teaching, so I'm not picking on you, Angelica, but started teaching the cradle roll class. I guarantee you Mike Archer would never step foot in the cradle roll class and try to teach that class. And bless his heart, he doesn't need to. But there's some others who can say, you know what? I can take cradle. I can do toddlers. You know, so if you're ready to do that, we're ready to talk to you. Fran. That's right. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10, whatever your hand finds to do, give it half an effort, right? Just see what you can do. No, you do it with all your might. You put everything that you can behind it. So first thing I want you to see tonight, again, laying a biblical foundation, we're going to start building on this, is from the biblical perspective, every servant of the master, we've all got something to do. So last year, we introduced something, and you see reminders of this around the building. There's posters that get moved around the building in various places to remind you about this idea of PBL forever. And it doesn't matter if you're a member of PBL or not. We hope you are. But this applies to every servant. Every servant of God is a part of PBL. They might not be a part of PBL, but they're a part of PBL for. I don't know if you remember what this is. All right. So here's PBL forever. Here's the Palm Beach Lakes Church. And we just took Palm Beach Lakes, obviously, and we took those letters. All right, what else besides Palm Beach Lakes can that stand for? What is our, first and foremost, what is our responsibility? It's to please God. I mean, that's our purpose on this earth. Our purpose on this earth in everything that we do, individually and collectively, is to please God. Now, in doing that, in achieving that goal and that responsibility of pleasing God, what other responsibilities do we have? Bring the lost to Jesus. We've got to do that. That's not just for those who are good at it or those who've done it before. That's a responsibility. That's the responsibility of every single one of us, is to bring the lost. So every servant is a part of this. What else is a part of pleasing God? Bringing the lost to Jesus, and then I want you to pay attention to that circle right there, because there are some arrows there that say this circle is moving. This circle is moving within itself. And our responsibility is not just to those who are lost to bring them in, but our responsibility is to love each other and to serve each other. And for how long? I mean, like, you know, a couple years? That'd be forever, right? Our goal, our responsibility is to help each other get to heaven. And so we introduced this, I think, last year sometime, and just try to have some regular reminders that this is our purpose. Our purpose, not just because it's PBL, that's just kind of nice it works out that way, but is to say our purpose is to please God, individually, collectively. Our responsibility is to bring the lost to Jesus. That's everybody's responsibility. Our responsibility, not just those who have time and those who are more adept at it, but everybody's responsibility is to love each other, to serve each other, to do good unto each other. And so what I want to do is I want to take this this concept, and I want to again expand on it to say, what do we need to be doing as brothers and sisters in Christ? What do we need to be doing in the church in order to be more effective in helping every part to find its place in the church, to be active in the church, to be functioning in the church, to bring about the overall benefit and growth of the church? So, let me 1 Corinthians 15:58. Turn over there real quick. I think you probably know the verse. But here's what we say sometimes. I think sometimes we think, well, I'm not going to do anything in the church until somebody asks me. Until somebody asks me, I'm not going to do anything in the church. Okay. Or, I'm not going to do anything in the church. I'll wait for an announcement to be made. You know, if the church puts out a need, and says, okay, we're looking for the, all right, then I'll just kind of wait. I'll kind of sit and wait. I'll be watching for that. Or I think sometimes we think that we have to have a program, that the church has to have a program that is organized by somebody and is doing these different things, and then I get involved in a program at the church that's got some organizational structure and assignments and activities and jobs and all of that. But unless it's in some kind of a program that the church, well, then I don't really have anything to do. All of those are wrong, by the way. None of those fit. How do we know? Well, because what does 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 58 say? Therefore, my beloved, be ye steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. Does always abounding mean I'm waiting? Does always abounding, well, you know, nobody really asked me to do anything, so I'm just going to, you know, I've got a free pass. I don't really have to do anything because, you know, the elders haven't asked me to do anything. Deacons haven't asked me to do anything. So I don't really have anything to do. Always abounding. Not just when asked. Always abounding in the work of the Lord. Knowing, what does he say? Knowing that your, what's the word after your? It's a five-letter word.
Labor.
Not in vain in the Lord. What's labor? Don't say having a baby. Take a different route on the word labor. What's labor?
Work.
And the word labor is more than just work. It's often used in the context to talk about real, excessive, to the point of toil, exhaustion, and sweat kind of work. And so he says, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for you to always be abounding in the work of the Lord, and I want you to remember that whatever you do, what does it mean that it's not in vain? What does that mean? Not for the wrong reason. It's not in vain. Not worthless, not for nothing.
Pleasing to God. I think it's pleasing to God.
Okay, so.
Your own glory.
Okay, it's not for your own glory. What you're doing, your labor, it's not in vain. Last three words, in the Lord. When you're working in the Lord, how could it be in vain? It wouldn't be worthless. There's going to be some benefit to it. But it's also this recognition that, do you ever, okay, don't admit this. Just think in your head, all right? Sometimes we may not like certain tasks because, well, there might not, I don't know if anybody's going to realize that I did this. There might not be many people that notice that, I went over and helped this person at their house and I'd kind of like people to know that I did that, so at least I get some form of appreciation. Is that what we ought to be looking for?
That's in vain.
The point of him saying it's not in vain is that we're not looking for the credit, because even if man never sees it, remember what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6? Don't do your charitable deeds to be seen by men, because your Father in heaven, who sees in secret, will reward you. Okay? So same thing about praying. And so he says, don't do it to be seen of men, because it only matters who's seeing you. God sees you, and that's all that matters. And so Jesus said more than once, blessed is the servant whom the Lord finds doing. When the Lord returns, what do I want him to be? What do I want him to find me doing? I mean, what did your parents ever leave you at home by yourself? When they back in the day, they wouldn't have texted you, but maybe mom called you. Hey, we're on the way home. Did your behavior change? It's like, we're on the way home. Whoa, okay, on the way. All right, you know, you scurried like a little. I mean, you're cleaning everything up, putting everything away, and you know, and then they get there, and you're sitting on the couch, and everything's all pretty, and it's like that the whole time, right?
I got out of bed.
Okay, I'm like, it's just me and John, or none of the rest of you relate to this. Allison, you still?
I still do that when my mom's coming.
Okay. Confession time. Allison still does that, and her mom doesn't even live with her. But why did we do that? Because we wanted mom and dad to find everything in good order, you know, not out of order. We want everything, you know, for them to be pleased with how things are upon their return. What about when Jesus returns? Are we concerned about what he finds when he returns? He's gonna come and find our lives all a mess, aren't they? I mean, we're not going to have everything straightened up in our lives, are we? But do I want him to find me? And this is figuratively speaking, okay? Figurative. But figuratively, do I want him to find me as a spiritual couch potato? What would a spiritual couch potato be doing?
Nothing.
Same thing that a literal couch potato's doing, right? Nothing. Can you imagine the Lord comes back and he finds you spiritually in your activity for him, instead of always abounding in the work of the Lord, he finds you couch potato for the Lord. He's got a lot of those, doesn't he? It's called a one-talent man who hid it in the ground. And remember what Jesus said to the five-talent man? Well done, thou good and faithful servant. What did he say to the two-talent man? Well done, thou good and faithful servant. What did he say to the one-talent man? You wicked and lazy servant. Wait a minute. No. He didn't waste it a riotous living. He saved it for him. Wicked and lazy. Two words we don't want to hear. So I want to share something real quick. We've got about 10 minutes. We shared this last year, but I want to show you the kind of the flow chart as it is of how the elders have divided up the work of the church here. I'm going to come back to this again next week, and we're going to approach it a little bit different next week. But what I want to do tonight is I want to ask you, here's the flow chart of how the elders see the work of the church here at Palm Beach Lakes working, and really it is a continuous cycle, as we will see. But instead of looking at this and saying, okay, who's in charge of that so that I can get involved, that's going to be next week. I want to ask you tonight, when we put this up on the screen, is there anything I can be doing in this area without anybody ever asking me to do anything? Okay? For example, here's where it starts. Sharing the gospel. This is where it starts. Sharing the gospel and inviting people to worship. Now, there are some works that our elders have assigned in this particular area to some people that are getting other members involved in specific tasks that are designed to help bring people to our worship. Okay? So, set that aside. What if you never get involved in any of those programs? Okay, so even if you never get involved in any of the programs that the elders have set up within that particular grouping, is there anything that you can do individually to share the gospel?
Yeah.
To invite people to worship? Or do I have to wait to be asked? There's all sorts of stuff I can. How can I reach out to people today? Okay, so we've got this track rack out here. By the way, that gets changed out every month. Every month, those tracks get recycled and different ones put out there, okay? So you ought to visit that at least once a month. Go by there, find something that you want to read, that you can read, and you can pass it on to somebody else. Hey, I read this, thought you might enjoy it. What else can I do? What else can I do? Talk to people. All right? All right? You can give them a variety of these of things. These cards right here, super easy to use. What else can you do? Study with them.
Call them.
Okay?
Pick them up.
Take them out to lunch.
All right? So take them out to lunch. Spend some time with them outside of the building. Build a relationship with them outside of the building. What else can I do to share the gospel with somebody and try to invite them to come to worship? Say it again. Okay, so now we're going electronic means, all right? All this other stuff was paper and handing things. So now we're sending links, we're texting or emailing some link. What are you talking about? To the website or to some article or something, okay? So do I have to be asked to do any of these things?
No.
No. These are things that I ought to be engaged in, whether the church has a program for it or not, whether it's being organized or not. I need to be involved individually in reaching out to people, taking the gospel wherever I can, inviting, and just one of the easiest things to do is inviting them to worship, taking some of these VBS invitations and passing them out, whatever we have, other invitations out there, just super easy things, or sending them along to people. So the way this flow chart, the way this progress works is our desire is to try to reach out to the lost and where we can invite people to come into our building. Well, where does that lead? Well, now we get people in our building. Now we've got guests who are in our building. Now, the elders have works assigned within this block. They say, okay, we want these things done to be done for our guests when they come to the building. And so there are assignments that are made every week that fall under this block. Okay? Now, set that aside for a minute. Even if you're never asked, even if you're not a part of a program that does something with guests inside of the building, does that mean you don't have any responsibility here? What can you do? You can sit in the middle. What does that mean? That means that you all are really good at taking the end pews, the end seats, and making everybody else climb over you. So if you sit in the middle, it allows other people to come and sit outside of you and not have to climb over you. What else can you do? Say again. Say hello to Tomasello, or to the guests, sorry. So, do we need to talk to people when they're here?
Sure.
We talk to each other pretty good. We've got our 30-minute members here. 30-minute members are, we've got people who show up here 30 minutes early, and we've got people who stay 30 minutes after services. Some of you are like, wow, really? I get here right on time, and I leave right off, and okay. But we've got folks who love visiting with each other, and that's pretty cool. But you know what we need to do before we visit with each other? We need to look for our guests. There are some of you who are A-plus students at looking for guests. A few Sunday nights ago, probably 6, 7, 8 weeks ago, we had a couple who visited with us on Sunday night. They were the last people out of the building because you all would not leave them alone. I'm kidding, but I mean, it was obvious that they were guests. Obvious, we hadn't seen them before. And you all swore, I mean, you were all around them, all right? That ought to be every guest that we have, is that we are, I'm not talking about that we're pressing them like the crowds were pressing up against Jesus, but they ought to be the ones we're looking, from the time we get out of our cars, we ought to be looking around, not because somebody's asked us to do something, it's because we're on holy ground here, and there's other people coming here, and I need to be looking for, hey, I don't know that person. Now, you know what our fear is? Our fear is we're going to walk up to them and say, hey, glad you're here. And they're going to say, yeah, I'm here every Sunday. I've been a member here for 10 years. And I don't want to be embarrassed. They don't know you either, all right? So if you don't know them as a member, that's later. That's over here down in the bottom corner, I think. But if you don't know them as a member, well, then you need to go. So if you don't know them, find out who they are, whether they're a guest, whether they're a member. Dan? Yep. So now, next week we're going to talk more about this from a program structural, where can you volunteer and get involved? And there's that part of it. But even if you're not involved in that, even if you don't sign up, it doesn't matter. You're a Christian. You signed up to greet our guests when you got baptized. All right? You may not have seen the sign-up sheet, but that's you. And so we need to seek them out. We're not going to get all the way around here. All right, so follow this progression. Now they've left. You know what's really cool? What's really cool is we get a lot of people that give us their names and addresses. Now, you all can help with that, by the way. If you would wait to fill out your attendance card until you're asked, that would be a huge help. And we say that because if everybody's already filled out their cards already and they've already turned them in, and we ask everybody fill out their cards, then if the guest is they're like, well, no, if I'm the only one doing it. But if everybody's reaching at the same time and everybody's pulling a card and you're sitting next to somebody and you pull out and you're like, oh, I got two. Here's a card for you. And you give them a card and it's everybody doing it at the same time and then we all pass them it. I stand amazed at how many folks will give us their names, addresses, telephone numbers, email addresses. All right, now. Every Monday, and was that first bell? Oh, you can't ring the second bell. I said we were getting out at 10:05 tonight. So every Monday, members, you get an email that has this attached. Every Monday, all right? With a few exceptions in the year, you're getting an email that has this My Opportunity Sheet is what this is called. And on here are names and addresses of the visitors. Don't delete the email. Well, I didn't sign up to write cards. I don't care. You got baptized. You signed up. Here is my opportunity sheet. People who have said, here's my name and address. Do you give your name and address out to just anybody? You're like, no. They gave it to us. Why'd they give it to us? There's an open door. They just opened the door for you. Here's an opportunity for you to write cards, to contact them. By the way, that's not to jump down their throat. That's not to preach at them. It's just to say, thank you for coming. So glad you came. And we hope that you'll come back.